Okay, so if you want to stay ahead of your competition, then you've got to know where your competition is at, and you've got to know the strategy and plan of your competition, and you've also got to know where your advantage is.
Hi, Rob. Welcome back to the Stay Hungry podcast. Today, I've got a special guest, Rob Moore, and we're talking about what business can teach you about boxing. Rob, welcome back to the Stay Hungry podcast.
Thank you, my friend. Stay hungry, stay humble, stay lean, stay mean.
My favourite bit is I've just said what business can teach you about boxing, and I meant what boxing could teach you about business, but fortunately...
Yeah, you fucked up your own intro,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's you boys producing it for me, so they can figure it out.
we'll leave that bit in, mate.
Yeah, fine, signed.
Yeah.
Welcome back. How's things?
Yeah, good. Yeah, really good.
So, I guess... For our uninitiated listeners, what's coming up soon that might mean we're talking about boxing?
So on July the 1st, I have a £100,000 bet on with Samuel Leeds, who thinks he's a big name in property, but he's a bit of an upstart compared to us. And he sat in this very seat here and he called me out for a fight. And I thought about it for about a nanosecond. Not only did I accept, I put 50 grand down, which he then upped to 100 grand. Actually, he's trying to up it to 200 grand and I'm thinking about it. Yeah, so on July the 1st. And people say, oh, yeah, Rob's doing a white collar. Well, not quite, because it's our own event. I think we pretty much sold all 1,700 tickets now, give or take maybe a dozen or two. We've got our own undercard of our team and our trainers. In our fight, no head guards, 12-ounce gloves. So, look, we're novices. It's not amateur level, but it's definitely a bit more than your average white collar as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, rumour has it you've been putting the hours in.
One can neither confirm nor deny. I'm not giving away my training camp secrets.
Okay.
I can tell you this, I won't be underprepared.
Yeah.
No way.
So, on that note, how does discipline and dedication required in boxing relate to the mindset you need to be a success in business?
Okay, so I just want to state for the record, I'm not a professional boxer. I'm a novice boxer. But I am a professional entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and I've done over 150 million in sales just in two training businesses I have in the last 17 years. And so it's been for me a really fascinating journey in paralleling the art of business and the art of boxing. So I think something that's really underrated in boxing is as soon as you agree to a fight, you actually have no idea what you got yourself into until it gets nearer and nearer to the fight. And business is the same because you decide to start a business and then you have staff and customers and legal and HR and marketing and sales. And if you'd have been told at the start, just how many moving parts and variables there are to a business and how challenging it would be emotionally, you probably wouldn't have even signed up for it. And if anyone had told me the emotional journey I would have gone on, and by the way, my fight isn't even for nearly 5 weeks, so I haven't even had the fight yet. You know, I'm always being told by my camp, train hard, fight easy. So I believe my fight will be a lot easier than my training, and it takes you on a really big emotional journey. So lesson number one is it takes something significant to put yourself in the ring. And I respect anyone who would go in the ring, even if it's white collar. And it's the same for starting your own business. It takes courage. The next thing is accountability, Joel. So I've lost nearly 10 kilos. Bearing in mind, I'm 6'3" and I started at 88 kilos. So I'm going to be under 80 kilos. And that is light for a guy who's 6'3".
Yeah.
And the weight has just fallen off me because the amount of training I've done. Now, I'm 44. I was starting to get a bit of middle-age spread. I'd wanted to get rid of it for a couple of years, and I'd sort of half-assed done various things. But as soon as I agreed to this fight, it was guaranteed that I was going to get in shape. Guaranteed. I think I'm the fittest I've ever been in my life. If you put me on the ski erg, you put me on the air bike, or you put me in the ring, or you get me sparring, I'm outlasting 20-year-olds regularly. And it's because I am accountable, because I've got 1,700 people and £100,000 on the line. So the second big lesson, Joel, is accountability. Anyone can be successful in business if your accountability is high enough. And then the third thing I'm going to say is people think often that boxing is fighting. But someone said to me, who's a coach, he said, boxing is a thinking man's sport.
Mm.
And I think it's underrated how technical, because I've done a bit of kickboxing, and believe you me, that gives me no advantage. Because the footwork in boxing and the movement in boxing is completely different to kickboxing. So I could kid my opponent, you know, that my kickboxing experience will help, but I can't push someone off with a front kick. I just can't do that because otherwise I'll get disqualified. So I don't plan to fight Samuel Leeds. I plan to box him. And I plan to outthink him and outsmart him and be more technical and more accurate, not just, you know, having a brawl. So business is also technical. Business is also a thinking man's sport. So I'd say they're the three big lessons I've got out of it so far.
I love that. I love that. Especially the third point, because there's so many people in business who are just having a brawl. Well, that's a really interesting point. And on that, sort of strategy and adaptability are key, both in business and in boxing. How can entrepreneurs apply these concepts to stay ahead of their competition, to navigate the changes ahead of them?
Okay, so if you want to stay ahead of your competition, then you've got to know where your competition is at, and you've got to know the strategy and plan of your competition, and you've also got to know where your advantage is. And so you've got to know yourself. So I'm going to give you my plan for the fight. I don't mind sharing it because I think it's pretty obvious how the fight's going to go. He's 25 kilos heavier than me, and he's admitted, and there's video proof of the fact that fitness is going to be his biggest challenge. So he knows he can't go too deep into the fight where the person who has the best fitness prevails. He knows he can't go there because he knows he hasn't got me on that because he's so much heavier than me. So he's going to have to come at me hard early and try and get me on the canvas as quick as possible. I know that. He said that. And with how much he weighs, that's what even professional coaches are going to give him. They're not going to say, you know, pick him off in the last minute of the last round when he gasses, because he's going to gas before I gas. Mm-hmm. So I know his plan. So then what's my plan? My plan is to let him come throwing bombs at me and miss. And the more he does that, the quicker he's going to get knackered, which he's trying to avoid anyway. And then he plays into my hands. So I know his game plan and I work my game plan accordingly. And yeah, I'm not a brawler. So why go in and brawl? I like boxing. I don't like fighting. So I want to box. I want to show some skills. I want to be technical. I want to be fast. I want to be fit. I want to be light. I want to be accurate. And so when it comes to your competition, you got to know their strengths and weaknesses and your own strengths and weaknesses. And then once you know those, you create your own plan. Because Joel, I'd say every single day, someone sends me a message saying, have you seen this that Samuel Leeds has posted? And have you seen this that Samuel Leeds has said? And I've said, no. Aren't you interested in his training camp and what he's doing? No, couldn't give a fuck. Because I know what he's going to do. And I know my own plan. And I don't want to get distracted by his photoshopped videos of how much weight he hasn't lost. Because I saw him on Sunday. And he's still overweight. And yet his photos make him look like he's not. And there's all this kidology because that's what he's like. And he's also trying to sell the fight. So you get to a point where you stop obsessing about your competition. You stop worrying about what they're doing and you execute your own plan.
Love that. Love that. And I guess on that note, how do you make sure that you're not allowing things to distract you? Because it's all well and good knowing your game plan, knowing about your competitors. But there does come a point where your competitors, to use your analogy, are putting a Photoshop version of reality out there and it might distract you.
Yeah. Well, if people keep sending them to me, I will give them some feedback. Stop fucking sending me that shit. I'm not interested. So whatever, because by the way, it's not me looking. Some people, it's like voyeurism. And you know, when you start, you should stalk your competition. You should stalk the best in your industry.
Yeah.
You want to learn from the best. So you should stalk them, definitely. because you want to learn what they know. You want to stand on the shoulders of giants and own the traits of the greats. But if you're now in competition with your competition and you're fighting your competition, you then need to probably start unfollowing them and focus on your own game plan. So don't put yourself in an environment where their kidology can get in your head, and then have your own clear plan to execute. So, you know, I worked out pretty soon that the only way I lose this fight is if he knocks me out. Mm-hmm. Because if he doesn't knock me out, it went the full distance. And he can't go the full distance. Therefore, if it goes the full distance, I've won the fight. So he has to knock me out. And I worked that out pretty quickly. So then I create my plan around avoiding getting knocked out. And then there's nothing else to say or do. It's just, he can talk all he likes. And people say, oh, he's 25 kilos heavier. Yeah, that makes him slow. Mm-hmm. Oh, but he's losing a lot of weight. Yeah, that'll make him tired when he comes in the fight. You know, because if he's had to lose a lot of weight, he won't have the energy. So everything that people could say to me gives him an advantage, I could say gives me an advantage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, the lighter I am, the quicker I move. The faster I am, he's got to hit me to knock me out. And if I'm fast, he's not going to hit me. And if he can't knock me out, he's not going to win. And if he can't hit me, he can't knock me out.
Nice. Nice. And I guess coming on to sort of confidence, how do you develop and maintain that level of confidence, both in terms of when you're about to jump in the ring with someone or when you're about to jump into a serious meeting, confidence as an entrepreneur, how that contributes to your success moving forward?
Okay, so I think there's two main elements of confidence, and people don't talk about them together, so hopefully this will be useful to people. Element number one is how good you are at the thing. Mm-hmm. Element number two is what you say to yourself about how good you are at the thing. So sometimes you're not that good at the thing, so you've got to be really good at telling yourself you're good at the thing. But sometimes you can work harder and get better at the thing so that you get more confidence. And the good thing about this boxing experience is I'm relatively new to it. I've been training 21 or 2 weeks. So at the start, I believed in myself and my ability to be able to beat him, but I didn't yet believe in my skills. Mm-hmm. So that confidence came from inner self of Rob and Rob's ability in 26 weeks to transform himself and be the fighter he needs to be, not now, but in 26 weeks. And my belief that I can out-train him and outsmart him. So that is what I'm saying to myself. But if I didn't train for 26 weeks, I wouldn't have confidence standing in the ring, because in the end, you're bullshitting yourself.
Yeah.
So training 10, 11, 12 times a week. Then when you overtrain, getting good rest and recovery. Then smart training and intelligent effort and good sparring partners and varying the training and increasing your speed and increasing your power and increasing your aerobic and increasing your anaerobic and having a plan. And so for me, when I start something or set a goal, the confidence is me. I can become it. And then what I do is I work relentlessly on getting good at it.
Yeah.
Because when all is said and done, if you're fucking good at something, that breeds confidence. And you can only bullshit yourself. You can bullshit yourself to get started. Because here's the thing, Joel. Like, think about this. Well, I was thinking about this in the car yesterday. We have this body that we've been given. And you could get a knife and slice my arm. And I could go to a doctor and within an hour, I've got 24 stitches. And within a month, my arm has repaired itself and all there is a small scar. Like, my body can repair itself. I can do exercise and get stronger and fitter and live longer. So I have been gifted and blessed with a vehicle that I can constantly improve. So I believe in my ability to do that because this vehicle I've been given has the ability to do that. So if you speak to anyone who's watched me train, and it always makes me feel good because this is my goal, but they're like, you know, they'll never say, oh yeah, Rob's a great boxer, but they'll say, fucking hell, for a 20-week experienced boxer, Rob is really good. Rob learns fast. Rob trains harder than anyone else. And I need to do that to build that factual, experiential confidence.
Yeah, competence. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Capability.
Yeah. So I guess what we're saying is, it's, you know, there's plenty of people out there, maybe even including your opponent, that have got a lot of confidence. But it doesn't matter if you haven't got the competence to back it up.
Yeah, and often that confidence isn't confidence. It's a veil.
Yeah.
It's a smoke screen.
Yeah, which goes back to the photoshopping your results and people's Instagrams looking like a highlight reel and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
I guess on the other side of that then, on the vulnerable side of business, resilience is crucial in both boxing and business. You know, there's going to be days where you don't spar well. There's going to be days where it really hurts. How have you developed resilience through your entrepreneurial journey, and how's that paying off in your boxing journey?
This is a really well-timed question, Joel, because I think every day about the paradox of intelligent effort and hard graft, facing your pains, your demons. And so in the early parts of this camp, Joel, I intentionally picked the hardest sparring partners I could. And if I was at a group sparring session where you swap and have different opponents, I'd always make a beeline for the most experienced boxers. Now, emotionally, I wanted to pick the ones I was better than. But I forced myself to make the hard decisions because I believe you get the most growth through the pain, the hardship, the feeling the fear and doing it anyway, the facing the demons, yada, 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 yada. However, there comes a point where actually that's not intelligent effort. That's hard effort. So now I'm only picking selected sparring partners based on what I want to work on technically and also size. Because actually most of my hard opponents are smaller than me. But I'm fighting someone who's bigger than me. The next thing is working down your sparring so you don't risk injury. And not always, you know, sometimes sparring technically and quite light, having days off. So I hit a wall in my training where I was exhausted, exhausted. And there's one night of the week that's our group spa night, so I don't want to miss that. Otherwise, I miss the whole week. And I was done, spent. And all I could hear in my mind was, you know, my strong mindset, or what would David Goggins say? You know, stay hard. Do it naked, you know. So I, not only did I make myself go to sparring, but I also trained before. So I did a double session. And my coach in the first session was like, Rob, you're done. This is like, you are done. And I was like, yeah. And then I went, and the whole day I was like, I wonder if I should, you know, maybe I should have a rest day. And anyway, I went sparring and I had some good rounds and blah, blah, blah. But I got knocked down. And my coach said to me, you're tired, mate. You wouldn't have got knocked down if you weren't tired. And so I stepped back and I thought, yeah, maybe I should have had some rest. So my stay hard attitude then could have put me at risk because maybe it wasn't intelligent effort. And you know, when you're sparring, you don't want to be tired. So to be successful in business, I believe, and we're doing the analogy with boxing here is, yes, you need to face your demons. Yes, you need to do hard shit. Yes, you need to get uncomfortable. But you also need to be smart and intelligent with your effort and know when you're just running into a wall. So if you're exhausting yourself and you're working 16 hours a day, but your work quality is going down, or you're highly emotional because you're exhausted, you're actually going backwards, not forwards.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't do rest and recovery very well. I never have in my life. And the reframe in my mind is rest and recovery is progress. Whereas I always used to think, well, no training today is regress. Yeah. But no, rest and recovery is progress. So it's smart work, hard work balance.
How are you switching your mindset to accept that? So that whole, because the amount of entrepreneurs you meet that burn out or perhaps don't have great relationships at home or aren't very nice to their kids because rest and recovery isn't part of their entrepreneurial process. It's like you say, they see it as a weakness. How are you changing that? And what would you advise others do?
Okay. So I wrote a book called Routine Equals Results. Mm-hmm. And I believe the most productive solution to essentially what you called work-life balance, Joel, but you didn't use those words,
yeah,
is having a tested, clear, and boundaried routine. So if your employees and your work and your customers and your social network and your partner and your kids and your coach, you involve them all in your routine and you give them all the right amount of time required to maintain that part of your life. And by the way, the important thing, Joel, is you've got to do it for you, not for them, because yeah, they'll all want you, but you can't give all of you to them. But you've also got to balance giving them enough. And then you create a diary structure and a routine where at this time, on this day, this is what you do, and it's non-negotiable. That is the closest you'll get to the panacea of work-life balance.
Yeah.
So when you get up, when you have your ice bath, when you train, when you do your meetings, when you do your recovery, when you spend time with your family, when you do your date nights, when you do your own personal development, how long you get to sleep, when you go away, yada, yada. These are all built into a routine and they are fixed. And where it goes wrong is where people either don't have a routine or structure. So all they're doing is reacting based on how they feel.
Mm.
Not what's right. And also they're allowing other people to cross their boundaries. Like if someone crosses your boundary, it's not their fault. It's your fault.
Yeah.
If you don't put a fence up around your house and someone walks in your house and you left the door open, you can't blame them for walking in. So we get pissed off with areas of our life that aren't right, but we're not teaching the world how to treat us. My team know they'll get emails from me at 11 o'clock at night. They know this, or even better for me, 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
They know that. They know I'm not doing meetings after 3 p.m. They know it. You know, I took this interview at 3 p.m. because I don't do meetings after 3 p.m.
Yeah.
Because they, energy-wise, they don't work for me. Like, if you build a business to build a life, not just a lifestyle, if, you know, some people have a lifestyle business, but they're not building a life. If you build a business to have a life, then, you know, I'm not doing more than an hour a day work at the moment. I'm focusing on the fight. I'm spending a lot of time with my family. I work from home most of the time when I do work so I can be with my family. I mean, the greatest lesson boxing has given me, in addition to the ones I've said, that is fitness needs to be your lifestyle.
Mm.
Like I took my kids to my coach and he did a one-to-one session with them at 6:30 p.m. on Friday. And I was there watching them and I got on the air bike. And if anyone knows what the air bike is, that if you want depression and pain and loneliness, but you want to feel great afterwards, go and have a word with that air bike. So I'm there 6:30, like dying alone on this air bike. And my coach just looked at me and went, you know, most people are out getting pissed, but this is a lifestyle. And if fitness becomes a lifestyle and you compartmentalize it in your diary. And when you say you're going to train, you train. Conor McGregor said when he lost, I think, first time to Poirier. And he said when he was training, he'd say to himself, I'm going to train, and then he wouldn't. Or he'd tell himself a time he was going to train, and then he would train later. Or he'd tell himself a time he's going to go to bed, but then he'd go to bed later. Tell himself he's going to eat good food, and then he wouldn't eat good food. But a routine makes it structured. So you don't have to keep having these discussions with yourself. I get in the ice bath every day, Joel. My brain tries to talk me out of it every day, but it's non-negotiable.
Love that. Love that. How have you made, to dig a little, how have you made rest non-negotiable when you've admitted yourself that that's the area where perhaps in the past it would give and you would try and outwork people when really you should be resting?
Okay. Well, number one, I was forced to by my body.
Mm-hmm.
So just yesterday, Joel, I had 4 naps in a day. I only woke to eat food and then I went back to sleep. And I must have had 16 hours of sleep in that day. And I must have eaten half a ton of food. And my body forced me into it because I was just so done.
Mm-hmm.
So number one is you've got to get in tune with yourself and listen to your body. My wife's always saying that, you know, listen to your body. And I've always been good at listening to my mind. But the problem with my mind is I can talk myself out of it. My mind can go, oh, I'm tired. And then I can say to myself, no, you're not. Watch a David Goggins video. Stay hard, motherfucker. And I can always talk myself around. So you've almost got to get rid of the mind part and listen to the body. And I think that's intuitive in all of us. So that's number one. Number two is a reframe. I used to see rest and recovery as regression, falling behind. Now I have to see rest and recovery as progression.
Mm-hmm.
Not regression.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So kind of like on the topic of progress, we talked about how boxing is a thinking man's game. And anyone that likes boxing will have heard it described as that. You can't, sluggers don't seem to last long in boxing, that would be. But it will mean in that ring, you're going to have to be making a lot of quick decisions. Much like in a business environment, you sometimes have to flex and make quick decisions. How are you working on your decision-making skills in a boxing sense that will help people in a business sense?
Okay, so number one is, what's my plan? If I know my plan before my fight, the decisions have already been made.
Nice.
In terms of strategy. Number two is, where's my competence level? I.e., am I good enough to execute my plan? So, you know, if your plan is to brawl, can you get them in the corner and keep them there long enough? Have you got enough power in your punches? Can you brawl for long enough without gassing? If your plan is to box, are you quick enough to get in and to get out? Obviously, remember, I'm a novice boxer. I'm fighting somewhere between white collar and amateur. But so number one, plan. Number two, competence. Number three, plan B. Or Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So can you react to a situation and have to change the plan or stay patient to not change the plan, even though it's not immediately going well? And then number four, can you manage your emotions? So my emotions have been tested by business for 17 years and speaking in front of thousands of people on big stages and all kinds of pressure. And so I know I can manage my emotions well as a business owner. I believe in my ability to manage my emotions well in the ring, but I can only really tell you about that in 4.5 weeks' time.
Mm.
Because if I manage my emotions well, I win the fight, Joel. If my emotions get the better of me, I equalize his chances. Because if you're a betting person and you match us up, you would bet on me, even if you don't know me and him. But the closer I let my because, you know, I guess emotions in boxing usually means impatience.
Yeah.
Swinging, you know, being, loose. So Will I be able to manage those emotions in the ring? I believe in myself that I will, yeah.
I love that. So I would say, having watched you from afar for a while, spoke to you a couple of times on the podcast, impatience is probably one of the words I'd use to describe you. And yet, it can be a tremendous asset in business to be impatient because you get shit done, but it can also be a huge flaw. Equally in the boxing ring, same issue. So what are you doing to tackle that natural urge to just get shit done and make sure that you don't get knocked out, essentially?
Yeah. One of the things about life that never stops fascinating me is I believe that everything exists in this almost sadistic paradox, whereby you could look at any emotion, and let's use patience as one of them, and you could argue why being too patient is bad and being too impatient is bad.
Yeah.
And you could argue why impatience can be good and patience can be good. And in any given situation, an emotion has an equal set of upsides and downsides. So I would probably say that my impatience is not really as an entrepreneur, Joel. It's as a human.
Yeah.
And when it comes to patience, anyone who's known me well enough knows I'd be really high up on the impatience scale. And that has created some of my biggest wins and my biggest mistakes. So it helps, Joel, that the punishment for impatience in boxing could be a knockout.
Yeah.
Because the thing with boxing is there is a risk that you could die and someone could kill you. And because of that, some things you may not have taken as seriously in the world of business. Because generally in business, all right, you know, you could analogize it with, you know, pugilism in business, but every day you're not going into a boardroom where you could die in that boardroom or get knocked out in that boardroom. So the main lessons I take much more seriously. So by the way, in our training, I've been put on my ass. Well, once on my knee and once on my ass twice. Both by much more experienced fighters than me, and both times because I was overreaching and pushing a right hand. So basically, the two times I've been put for what would have been a standing eight count or a 10 count was when I was pushing the pace, and I was both overreaching physically, technically, but also hitting shots I didn't need to hit, and I wasn't patiently setting up with my jab. So because I'm fighting someone who's a lot bigger and slower and less fit than me, I don't have the worry of having to stay really busy for the judges because I'm naturally going to be more busy. So, yeah, you know, I often spar with my coach and he's like, be more patient. You don't need to throw as many shots as you do. But the punishment for impatience could be a knockout. So I'm taking that a bit more seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's often the case for entrepreneurs and business owners when they're expecting results more quickly than their competence deserves, and actually that little bit of patience, not necessarily throwing the right hook too soon, pays off.
Yeah. Self-awareness is one of the hardest things to do because everyone's got an opinion of you. And then you've got different versions of your own personality that have got an opinion of you. And then you've got an opinion of everyone else. So there's a lot of fucking voices in there all going wow, 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 wow about how you should show up. I think you've got to know yourself. So, like, I am impatient. I will die trying to do something in order to be successful. And we knew going into this that those would be my greatest friend and foe. My wife has even said to me, you know, the only way you lose this fight is by beating yourself, Rob. I.e. overtrain, get injured being careless, let the emotions run and end up throwing the plan out the window. I was sparring with a couple of my coaches and I got him in the corner. And the guy who coaches me, he's had 17 fights. This was another one of my coaches, 17 fights, way more experienced. And I got him in the corner and it's hard to get him in the corner because he's fucking good. And I'm like, I've got him in the corner. And I just started throwing shots all over the place. And they stopped me and it was like, look, pick your shot. Take a step back, pick your shot. Don't just get him in the corner and then just, you know, hit gloves. Take a step back, pick your shot. And yeah, you know, I like that. Rob, if the emotions are getting the better of you, if the impatience is there, or if the, you know, die trying ethic is there, take a step back, pick your shot.
Love that. On that die trying mentality, I mean, we'll have both met loads of entrepreneurs that have got a die trying mentality, and many that metaphorically have died because of it. They've taken themselves to the edge and fallen off. How can you be self-aware enough to know when you're jumping from a patient mentality where you're picking your shots to falling into the grind, die trying, I refuse to give up, but actually this is doing more damage than good mentality?
Yeah, well, everyone who is or wants to be something will say that they've got ridiculous work ethic, but not everyone has, so they're not self-aware. And you know, every successful fighter in the UFC says they work harder than everyone else. Well, you can only have one who works the hardest. And actually, I interviewed Eddie Hall, World's Strongest Man, and he reckoned his edge was not his training, but he hacked recovery where he could speed up his recovery. Cryotherapy, ice baths, you know, increasing the number of massages at a time when no one was talking about that.
Yeah, he put an oxygen chamber at the bottom of his garden.
Yeah, well, I've seen it in his house.
Yeah.
He couldn't afford one and he built one.
Yeah.
Which is quite dangerous.
Well, what was it? I mean, speaking of die trying and getting too crazy, he basically bet on himself that he'd be able to lift half a ton off the ground in order to be able to afford to have the stuff he needed to become World's Strongest Man, which...
Bosh.
Yeah. Ouch.
Yeah. So the first thing is you've got to be honest with yourself and say, are you putting in the work required? Number one. The next thing, which is like, if there's a phrase that I think sums up success anywhere, it's intelligent effort.
Yeah.
So social media is full of the hustle and grind, because it looks good. It's almost a brag. I work harder than you. But a lot of people are working really, what is it they say? They major in minor things.
Yeah.
And if you're working hard and exhausting yourself on low value tasks, then you're just going to burn yourself out. Because by the way, I don't believe anyone burns themselves out doing something they love.
Mm-hmm.
You can get exhausted, but your mind will be stronger because it's something that you love to do.
Yeah, you'll still
Whereas something
fulfilled.
You hate to do, like even the, like give David Goggins, who apparently has got a really strong mindset. I mean, it looks like it when it comes to physical exercise, but get him doing exams.
You wouldn't want to marry him. You wouldn't
He'll give up in 12 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And his brain, his chimp will start screaming at him all over the place because he clearly loves fitness and he loves, you know, being a diehard. So number one, are you really working hard? If you are you working hard in the right things? Are you working hard in doing the things that you love to do? And are you exercising intelligent effort? And intelligent effort is working on the right things.
Yeah.
I am not even an amateur level boxer. So there are a lot of things I have not got time to get good enough at. Yeah. So I have to reduce what I get good at and work on what gives me the greatest advantage. The next thing is, like, I have, way back as a kid, I used to have issues with my Achilles. And when I do running, my Achilles and knees start to hurt. So I look at a lot of people's training regime and there's a lot of running in it. That if I ran that much, I might not make the fight. So how can I get the same level of aerobic fitness not on the roads? So maybe air bike, bike, rower, ski erg. Maybe I need to do a bit more sparring, but technical sparring, blah, 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 blah. So you got to play to your strengths.
Yeah, I love that. That work smart, not necessarily work hard. I mean,
intelligent effort.
We've all had a relative who really works hard and has nothing to show for it. And there's a huge lesson there.
Because if you work really hard, employed in a job you don't love, you're working more than half your life for the government.
Mm.
And by the way, that's being nice to them on how much tax they charge us.
Yeah. I was going to say.
So, yeah. Yeah. Just let that sink in.
Yeah. Sorry. 3/4 of your life is being taken away from you for working hard. Yeah. Well done. So, coming back to the boxing analogy, boxers obviously don't become champions by themselves. They rely on a really strong network around them. How can entrepreneurs build and leverage their network to make themselves champions?
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest myths in business is someone who is self-made.
Mm-hmm.
All self-made really means is you didn't start with handouts, inheritance, or benefits, or someone who did all the work for you. But as you build a business, you cannot do it on your own. And a solopreneur is not an entrepreneur. So you cannot be successful on your own. You need people that you can leverage their skills, talents, and passions. You should only really be doing the things that you're good at, you love to do, and are of highest value to your goals, your vision, your outcome, your values. Everything else should be delegated, outsourced, hired. Now, if you want a cheat code for becoming more successful more quickly, it is to build that team as quick as you can with people who are as good as they could be.
Mm.
I've interviewed Floyd Mayweather twice on my show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I'm happy with my coach. He's really good. But if I trained for 25 weeks with Floyd's dad, that would give me an edge because he's a great coach. And if I had the best nutritionist, the best strength and conditioning coach, yada, yada. And MMA is a great example, Joel, because, you know, they've got jiu-jitsu coach, striking coach, kickboxing coach. They've got nutritionist, manager, and literally they've got an entourage because they do so many disciplines.
Yeah.
And business is like that. If you want to grow your business and you want to grow your wealth, you need a good operations manager, a good MD, a great PA is vital.
Mm.
You need editors, outsourcers, people in finance, people running your events, people doing your tech. And people think, oh, but yeah, Rob, I can't afford to hire people. You can't afford not to.
Yeah. And that's the risk gambit, right? That's the whole stepping into the ring. It's like, well, do you want to step into the ring or not? And hiring people is part of the game.
Yeah. Like, people almost expect that they can do and have what they want, but there's no cost to that.
Mm.
It's like a lot of people want to be able to share their opinion, not get criticized, but what gives you the selfish right to think that only you can share your opinion and not get criticized? And people want the trappings of wealth without the cost that comes with it. I don't see hiring people as a risk. I see not hiring people as a risk. So it's just a, but then I've got nearly 150 people on my payroll, 105 of them in this building. So I've seen the proof of that.
Yeah.
But you can't have the reward without the risk. So if you're not taking any risk, that's why you've got no reward.
I feel like you can see my questions. I promise you can't. So my last question is on entitlement, which is kind of what we're getting at here, in that a lot of people think they're entitled to the rewards without the work or without the risk. And a lot of people might be the young upstart in your industry or space. What can people do to address entitlement within their own teams? And also, what can you do to address entitlement within your industry to make sure that it's clear that you deserve to be there?
Okay. So this is another one of those lovely paradoxes, Joel.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you just said you deserve to be there. So in your own mind, when talking to yourself, like I said about confidence that comes from your mind, you have to tell yourself you deserve to be on the pitch. You deserve to be in the game. You deserve to be in this field. But at the same time, you deserve nothing. You earn what you get. So that's a paradox, isn't it? You've got to tell yourself you're worthy, i.e. I deserve, but at the same time, you've got to have the attitude that I don't deserve, I earn.
Yeah.
So no one who's successful, and I've met thousands of successful people and interviewed loads of billionaires on my Disruptor show, no one got successful without sacrifice. And no one who's at a level did not deserve to be there. Now, I saw Mel Robbins say something which I thought was really wise. She said, do you know what jealousy is? She said, jealousy is actually desire. Because if you're jealous of someone, it's because you have a desire for it. And if you're not jealous, she said something like, I'm not jealous of someone who has a £10 million apartment in New York because I don't want to live in New York. Yeah. So she's not jealous of it. But if someone's got what you want, you desire it, and that manifests in jealousy, that can be good because that can drive you. You just have to not let that emotion own you. And so it is with deserving. Yeah, you deserve, but no, you fucking don't. You got to go and earn it and be honest about that. So no one cares. Work harder. Stop making excuses. Don't blame. Don't complain. Don't defend. Don't justify. Work harder. Work smarter. And in the end, you will get what is rightfully yours through divine intervention. If you believe that you have the divine birthright for wealth and success, which in some ways we do. Humans aren't made to be a unmanifest, low potential version of themselves. They're not. You know, we're born and we're this machine, like a Lamborghini Aventador. It has 12 cylinders, but when we're born, we're only operating one of them. But we've got this, all this infinite potential and power to use, but we've got to tune into all of this. And over life, through our struggles, we can tune up the engine. So the potential is there in all of us. So that in that regard, there is deserving latent within us. But we have to tune in. There's this brilliant little video on TikTok of this chubby, sweet little kid. And he's looking at his belly and he does 10 leg presses and then he lifts his top up and he pinches his belly and he's disappointed that it hasn't gone down.
I can relate to that.
Because he thinks doing 10 leg presses can make his belly go. Well, actually, if you do 10 leg presses four times a week and you eat well and you rest well, that belly's going to go in 2 or 3 years. You can look ripped. You can turn yourself into Mr. Olympia. You have that potential, but you have to earn it. You have to fire up all the cylinders.
Yeah, but you're not going to do it unless you believe you can.
Yeah, because on the other side of it, if you believe it's hard for you, it was how you were raised, it's where you were born, it's the family you've got, it's your friends that bring you down, it's always the government, you know, you have been given this vehicle And by the way, your mind as well is, I mean, that's on another level to your body, isn't it? But you have been given this vehicle, this vessel, and this supercomputer, which can manifest thoughts into riches. But you have to learn how to use it, and then you have to use it. And you are responsible for it. No one else. The government, your mum, your dad, your family, social media, the algorithms, none of those are responsible for your success. And as soon as you blame them, you make them responsible, and then you fail.
Love it. And on that note, after being an awesome guest, what do people need to do to tune into this fight?
MoreVLeads.com. If there are any tickets left, MoreVLeads.com. 1,700 capacity, Brentwood, Essex. We got a couple of dozen tickets left, so be quick. Standard seating only left. Sold out all the tables within days of launch. I'm going to put on a show.
Love it. Rob, thank you so much for being an epic guest once more.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Joel.